Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Thanks for listening today. We'll talk now about the confession by Pedro Hernandez and his arrest for the murder of Eitan Peetz. They are raising questions even as they promise to solve the mystery surrounding the little boy's disappearance 33 years ago from a Soho bus stop. Joining me to talk about the latest developments and how the police, prosecutors, and family are handling it, also why the FBI is reportedly raising questions about the arrest, is Murray Weiss, DNA Info columnist and their criminal justice editor. Hi, Murray. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian.
Let me start with the FBI. Why are we hearing that the FBI reportedly has doubts about this case?
Well, the FBI's doubts are not unlike other people on the other side of the fence who did the arrest to some degree. The FBI, as you know, is an agency. In their name, it says investigation. They are the Federal Bureau of Investigation. They like to do investigations. That's their mission. That's their mandate. That's how they function. They've spent a lot of time on this case over a long period, as has the New York City Police Department. The revelation that a man with, shall we say, psychiatric issues, he's bipolar, he's schizophrenic, suddenly confesses to a crime 33 years ago raises a bunch of on-the-surface questions to even veteran detectives, much less FBI people. The FBI has units of profilers. One of their profilers years ago actually was involved in the case where another suspect named Jose Ramos, who is a convicted pedophile and was the boyfriend of Eitan Peetz's babysitter, he was involved in that case where they declared a civil court judge to declare that he, Jose Ramos, was responsible for the death of Eitan Peetz. So the FBI, you know, stands there in their position and they're scratching their heads saying, you know, there's a lot of work to do before some person's confession, somebody who's maybe hallucinates and has delusions, that it's provable that what he's saying, and maybe he actually believes it, is in fact true. Now, in fairness, that's the challenge for the NYPD, and that's the challenge for the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, and they're aware of that.
The civil suit, it was against the boyfriend of Eitan Peetz's babysitter, brought by who, the Peetz family?
The case has a long history of ups and downs. In the mid-'80s, the office of the Manhattan United States Attorney's Office, which at the time was Rudy Giuliani's office, he appointed some of his federal prosecutors to look into the Eitan Peetz case to try to solve it. And in fact, the prosecutors, in conjunction with the FBI and the NYPD, built a little mountain of circumstantial evidence against Jose Ramos. So much so that in 2004, they presented the evidence to a civil court judge, and he ruled that Jose Ramos was, in fact, responsible for the death. And I just want to make the point that the evidence is not some sort of whimsical, flimsy, he's the guy because he was the babysitter. You know, there are statements by him that he took a blonde-headed boy from that bus stop that morning. He said when he saw the pictures on television that he's 90% certain it was Eitan, although he doesn't admit to the killing. At other points, he made confessional remarks that while he was in jail, serving 20 years for abuses of other children. So he's a pedophile. He's made statements. He was a friend of the family, so to speak. And he's played all kinds of other cat-and-mouse games with the Bureau and the federal prosecutors. And, in fact, the civil court judge made that determination.
But they never criminally charged him with the murder.
Correct. And that is actually a brilliant point, that the office of Robert Morgenthau, recognizing the higher bar for prosecuting somebody criminally and getting 12 jurors to say that the evidence, albeit strong circumstantial, was proof, he never brought that evidence to a grand jury, even though the FBI, the federal prosecutors, and the Peetz family, you know, all pushed for him to do so. Now, the Peetz family, as I wrote in a column yesterday, they're the most skeptical of all. You know, they
really
know this case. Yes. They know this case better than anybody, and they have been, particularly Stan, so convinced of Jose Ramos' guilt that every year he sends missing poster photos of his child, Eitan, to Jose Ramos in jail with a note on the back saying, "What did you do with my little boy?"
Mm. And you got to feel terrible for the family being dragged through all of this yet again, even if Ray Kelly and the NYPD feel that they're doing this to some degree on their behalf and, of course, on behalf of the interests of justice per se. The family did post a sign at their apartment in Soho, I read on the door, that wrote, "To all the media people hanging around here, you have managed to make a difficult situation even worse. Talk to your assignment editors. It's past time for you to leave me, my family, and my neighbors alone." So I feel terrible for the Pates family. Have they made a public statement about the arrest of Pedro Hernandez?
No. In fact, I can say that the column I wrote yesterday sharing their view of it being that they're enormously skeptical is about the most public view of how they feel. You know, there are other aspects, which I did report as well, that adds to the portrait of what they've actually lived with. You know, there have been not only people coming forward claiming to have some involvement in the death, which has now occurred again, but young blonde men have actually showed up at Stan Pates' workshop and fundamentally said to him, one of them actually did, said, "Dad, I'm Eitan, I've come home." So they've experienced privately some enormously difficult, shocking, disturbing realities that the public isn't even aware of. You know, people claiming to be their son grown up and come home with, you know, detailed stories of where they've been. One of them actually had to take a DNA test.
Really?
So that they could prove that to him that he wasn't the son, and to the Pateses.
Any questions, listeners, from Murray Weiss, criminal justice editor for DNA Info, the local news organization, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show as we try to understand what's going on with this Eitan Pates case arrest. Now, according to the police, Hernandez claims to have lured Eitan into the basement of the bodega where he worked off the books and strangled him and put his body out with the trash a block or so away, leaving no physical evidence of the crime. So that's an impediment, no physical evidence of the crime, though they have this confession. Does Hernandez, is it my understanding that he has no criminal record as well, either before or since Eitan Pates?
That's my understanding. He has no criminal record, which, you know, there's two, you know, you hit on a first point there that, you know, this is like an investigation in reverse. A man comes forward and says, "Hey, I killed somebody," and provides a detailed account, even if it sounds credible. How do you, you know, normally it works in reverse. You get evidence, you get clues, and it leads you to somebody. Here, you have to try to uncover enough evidence to support his claim in something that happened 33 years ago. He did make statements to some of his relatives and others over the years on occasion, so that kind of supports the notion that it isn't just a one-time thought in his head, mm-hmm. but proving it is otherwise. But the notion that he has no arrest record is also another reason to be a bit skeptical. It's a man, albeit at 19 years old, provides no motive for the murder other than I lured him in, I had, you know, an urge, a violent urge, I guess, and he quickly strangles the boy, and that's the end of the murder case. Somebody with that kind of one-time rage, one would think that that rage would show its face at least another time where he would wind up being arrested, you know, even if it was just he got into an argument on the street and punched somebody, you know, sometime in the rest of his life. You know, do people have one-time rages like that? Extremely unlikely.
Let's talk to an NYPD lieutenant calling in, Danny in Massapequa. Hey, Danny, thanks for the shout.
Hey, good morning, guys. You know, when I picked up the headline, I saw that the guy was schizophrenic and all of that stuff. I had serious doubts that they'd ever be able to get a conviction on this case. And there is no physical evidence. The only thing that I think the police department may have that we don't know is if this guy revealed some type of information about what Eitan was wearing that day or something about him that wasn't privy to the public, or perhaps he kept some kind of a souvenir. You never know. And that hasn't been released to the public yet because it would taint a jury. And maybe they, no matter how crazy you are, if you knew something that wasn't deemed to the public, then you would have that you couldn't possibly know that. So maybe that's the only thing that came to light recently that finally swayed them to make an arrest. But
right.
I hope my only concern is the Pat family. I hope now at this point this guy did do it, and it's not anything else that would torment them further, because these people have suffered enough.
Thank you very much. Well put. And a central point, because it was reported that, Maureen, tell me how specifically you know any of this, that there's a statement or the implication that the NYPD has some kind of something from Hernandez that would really lead them to believe this is the guy. And I don't know if that means he was able to identify a birthmark that they knew Pates had, or something else that would really make it kind of rock solid in terms of circumstantial evidence.
Well, I can't say that that's not true. I'm not aware of that as being true. I think he provided them with he reenacted the crime. He provided them with a lot of detailed information, and I think that is, the totality of what made them feel that they had probable cause, as Ray Kelly said. We had probable cause to arrest them, and their alternatives are very slim. The alternative is just releasing him. In the meantime, they have him. He's been placed in not just jail, but getting some psychiatric care. So I'm not aware of any, like, there's a eureka revelation in his statement.
Any prosecutors listening right now? ADAs, former ADAs, would you like to try this case? Would you be happy to take this to a jury? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Ed in Jamaica, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ed.
Yeah, how you doing?
All right.
Basically, one is a question and one is a point. I remember this case. I was in New York when this case happened, and I just find some of the explanations that this guy Hernandez gives to be specious, because I remember they canvassed that neighborhood. I mean, even a relative of mine was involved, and I can't see how he could have hid that little boy in a garbage bag and it just got taken away, because that neighborhood was extensively canvassed for several weeks, and that gives me reason to have pause, number one. And number two, this guy has I believe it was in DNA Info, this guy has a history of bipolar or mental problems, and he was going through a crisis at the time he admitted to this crime. Could this be like another JonBenet case with that guy a couple of years back who admitted to the crime, and then eventually it bared out that he had no involvement with it whatsoever? Because 30 years with this case, and as much literature has been published about it, you could get information in detail if you really put yourself to it, especially with the Internet. The whole thing just seems very specious.
Yeah, Ed, thank you very much. And there are false confessions all the time. We just had a story on NPR on Friday about this poor guy who confessed to a rape that he hadn't committed. He spent time in prison. He finally got exonerated. And they went through the many and varied circumstances that led him to issue a false confession, in that case, to a crime that he never believed he committed. There wasn't a question of his mental state. But false confessions happen all the time. What about Ed's point regarding the body bag and how this could have not been noticed by people in the neighborhood and just taken away by sanitation, considering the dragnet that was out for Eitan Pates at that time?
It's definitely another reason to wonder about the accuracy of Mr. Hernandez's statement. Most people don't recall the intensity of that investigation at the time and the high profile nature. I mean, sanitation people themselves were on high alert, putting a human, a young boy's body in a bag. It was put in a bag and a box. So, the weight alone would have likely caught the attention of a sanitation worker, much less the potential of the imbalance in it. And, I talked to some of the highest-ranking police officials who were around at that time, and they spoke specifically to that point, that they themselves say it's just improbable. I mean, as we all know, Brian, anything is possible. Things fall through the cracks. Things are missed. Mr. Hernandez could likely be the guy. He did live there. He obviously has mental issues. Could he have had a sudden urge? Could the sanitation workers picked up a box and just threw it in the back and not paid attention to it at that time? Yes, but you know, you have to try to look at things logically and like what's probable, and that things generally happen in the simplest way possible. And on the surface, you know, those are legitimate concerns and questions.
We just have a couple of minutes. A few things real quick. Has Hernandez entered a plea? He was arraigned on Friday. Did he plea?
I believe he pled not guilty, and he's gone to, you know, he's getting psychiatric evaluation.
So there's enough to scramble the brains of most people listening right now, because what we have is he gave police a confession and a not guilty plea in the same week.
Right.
And then what about, I mean, I assume that Ray Kelly wouldn't put the Pates family through this unless he really believes he's got the guy. So despite all these doubts that people have rightly been raising, what do you think is really going on here?
You know, I'm not going to disagree with you, but I think everything has a little nuance to it. And I think they have somebody who's told them the story they told them. I think it's a credible story. I think the detectives on the case now certainly believe that I'm not going to say they don't believe him and they're charging him. I think that they feel that there's reason to believe him. I know that the media, some people in the media were beginning to hear that somebody had come forward and confessed. So perhaps, you know, you put those elements together. Listen, the police department is supposed to arrest people on probable cause and then and solve crime. You know, they don't have the luxury that, say, we were talking about the FBI, where you have months to look at things. And this case presented a fact pattern to Ray Kelly that he felt he needed to get in front of, and he felt that there's enough reason to arrest him. And obviously the district attorney, I believe, in this case, you know, agreed that there's enough to do it. The question is whether they can find enough support for Mr. Hernandez's statement, because all the things that he's saying that work against him actually could work for the defense. My client's delusional. He makes things up. Yeah. He doesn't know what he's talking about. So they're a long way from if Mr. Morgenthau didn't want to go with Ramos to a grand jury, you know, this is a similarly tricky case.
All right. We will see what happens. We're trying to confirm whether he did actually enter a plea or not. There's a little haziness here about whether he entered any plea at the time on Friday.
He may have waived and just gone for the psychiatric.
I think that may be what happened. So it would be a little less directly, maybe a little less contradictory in that case. But we'll confirm that and we'll put it out. But in the meantime, we thank Murray Weiss, criminal justice editor for DNA Info. Thank you very, very much.
Yeah, my pleasure, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we have Ippolito Acosta, the most highly decorated officer in the history of the U.S. Immigration Service, now the author of a book called The Shadow Catcher about his role in the drug and immigration border wars. Stay with us.